Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
4 weeks before their graduation, Kevin Schaefer walked author Amy Butcher to her home in their college town of Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. Hours after parting ways with Butcher, Kevin fatally stabbed his ex-girlfriend, Emily. He waited 40 minutes, then called the police and met them outside. Psychiatrists would later conclude that Kevin had suffered a psychotic break on the night he killed Emily. Butcher was severely affected by Kevin's crime, but remained devoted to him as a friend, writing him monthly. Over time, she grew determined to uncover proof that what Kevin did not only been unintentional, but unconscious. She writes about all of this in her new book, Visiting Hours, a memoir of friendship and murder. And we welcome Amy Butcher to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joe, for having me.
It's very nice to have you. Give us a sense of the timeline here of from the year that this happened to the point where you start to dissect it and want to write about it.
Absolutely. So the way that night happened was essentially I had seen Kevin all of that night. We had been together, a group of us, kind of having drinks and celebrating the end of really the end of our college careers and our lives as students at that point. This was about a month before our college graduation. Kevin walked me home that evening. He was entirely calm and collected. There seemed to be nothing wrong, something that would really prove troubling for me in the coming years. He said goodnight to me and then essentially turned for home, and it was in the morning that I found out that there had been a violent incident on campus that Kevin, I would find later, had been involved, and then eventually, of course, I would find that he was the one who had done it. So for me, the process of kind of remaining in touch with him, it came very instinctually. I mean, this was someone, one of, you know, nine people that I spent all of my time with. This was a social circle that was incredibly close. And it felt to me kind of a given that I would be there for him, that I would see this through, even in the face of what really was a very graphic, very brutal, very seemingly intentional kind of crime.
So how many years ago was that?
That was 6 years ago.
And through that time, you've been working through this, obviously, and I'm curious as to what point you said, okay, I want to write about this.
I don't think I've ever really wanted to write about it, which is a strange thing to say when your book comes out. For me, it was a process of writing about really anything else, thinking about anything else. I was writing Kevin every month for about 3 years, and about 18 months into that, he accepted a plea deal. But prior to the plea deal, he really couldn't talk about anything. There was a trial being put together. For that matter, it was of such a close proximity that I didn't quite feel comfortable asking. And in a lot of ways, I think at that point I didn't entirely want to know. I always believed that this was not something Kevin had intentionally done, but I had no way of knowing that. And to find that proof and find it to be in contradiction of what I believed, I felt would be obviously very difficult to deal with, and then to deal with my, you know, ongoing communication with him. And so when the plea deal was accepted, that gave me sort of a green light to go and seek this information out. And I tried first with Kevin, who, you know, understandably perhaps did not want to talk about this. This was something that at that point he was trying to move beyond. He called it, you know, his biggest mistake and wanted to spend the rest of his life working against it. And I certainly understand that narrative, but I also felt very strongly for myself that I needed to understand what had happened. And if that wasn't going to come from him, then it would have to come from, obviously, the public documents that kind of set out what happened and had that evidence to back it up. And so I drove to Gettysburg, and I went through a lot of these files. I mean, files that were incredibly difficult, files that I still feel a little bit of confliction about going through. And yet I think that kind of attests to the way in which when something really nonsensical and dark happens, and it scares you and it kind of shakes you up, you have kind of a tendency to seek that thing out and figure out what about it. It seems so nonsensical. In this case, I found that all of the evidence and all of the professionals that had been hired, you know, to assist in Kevin's defense, and for that matter, even the prosecution, all attested to the fact that this had been something that Kevin had done without his knowing. In other words, in a dissociative episode, what happens essentially is that whether or not one knows right from wrong, and there was a little bit of disagreement between whether at the time it's possible to know whether what you're doing is right or wrong, regardless of that fact, there was no no way for him to kind of act upon that impulse. In other words, he was so overcome with emotion that this was something kind of unavoidable. And I can't imagine anything scarier than that. And so the process then became, you know, what do I do with this information? I had been hoping all along that it was clear cut. It is not clear cut. And I don't know how to negotiate, you know, the feelings that I have for him as his friend, and also the feelings that I have in my own life, which is to say that the event had really traumatized me. It had traumatized everyone in our social circle. And I think, you know, regardless of how some of us acted, I think it's very clear there was a distinct fracturing.
There are several interesting parts of this in your relationship with Kevin, in the sense that you met almost immediately upon going to college in Gettysburg, right? You met right away.
That's correct. Yeah, we were both freshmen, so we met that first week even before any of the upperclassmen were invited to campus. So in a lot of ways, those first few days, it was us and it was Gettysburg, and it felt, you know, of course, you're a freshman in college. You feel like all of the power and all of the possibility is before you.
So then you, I believe it's your junior year, you go and study abroad for a semester, and at that time, Kevin, who is struggling with depression, looks to take his own life. When you come back, it's a difficult thing to discuss, obviously, because it's somewhat taboo, right?
Right.
And at that point, did you think of him as some way of concern as to what he would do to himself, or yes, maybe even what he could do to others?
Yeah, you know, it's really difficult to talk about being 18, 19, and 20 and still talking about your life as if you are a child, but really that's kind of how it felt. To a certain extent, I mean, I have known a lot of people, especially when I was in high school and into college, who struggled with depression, who struggled with, you know, thoughts of suicide. I had known several people in my school district, right, that had attempted this. I mean, this was something that was incredibly familiar to me, and incredibly familiar to me, too, on a personal level. I mean, one thing that became clear as I was writing this book is, if I'm going to talk about the way in which this crime affected me and the way in which I feel really conflicted about Kevin, I need to look this idea of mental illness in the eye. And to do so is to admit that I struggled with depression. I struggled with suicidal ideation throughout my teenage years. And so in a lot of ways, you would think that I would return and know about this incident and immediately seek him out and sort of be there for him. But on the contrary, I mean, to be this age and to feel as though I had been so far from him, it doesn't seem that difficult now, but at the time it felt nearly impossible to have an honest conversation, to say, I have been where you are. I don't want you to feel ashamed about this. I don't want you to feel embarrassed about this. I want to do whatever I can possibly do to help you. And the other thing is, I think there was this natural idea that perhaps, you know, he spent several days in the Reading Memorial Hospital and would return to campus. And so the idea was that someone was checking in on him, that he had been vetted out, that whatever had happened had been something of, you know, I don't want to say a fluke, but something that had passed for him. And so in a lot of ways, we saw it, or at least I'll speak for myself, I saw it as something that it was my responsibility to kind of just be his friend, to be present and to kind of occupy his life beyond, you know, the hours of school. And that's essentially what I did for, you know, a year and a half until this event actually happened.
You describe it as the way you've kind of learned to think about it is a coming of age overnight. This is the thing that makes you grow up.
Yeah, and it sounds very, very strange. I mean, one of the conflictions I've had in writing this book and also in having it published is that you're essentially talking about this terrible trauma that happened to two people that are not yourself, and yet I'm claiming that it happened to me. And that's a really kind of controversial stand to take. But I think what became evident for me is that when this happened, I mean, you think about domestic violence, you think about any act of violence. It is not just those involved who are affected. It essentially created a ripple effect that moved out through all of us. I mean, I have lost a number of friends about this, some who feel very strongly that what happened with Kevin is simple and that he should be punished for this, others who feel sort of conflicted and in that confliction have withdrawn. And so in a lot of ways, it's been something that we've all been sort of struggling with in our own ways. For me, it manifested in writing Kevin and visiting Kevin and seeking out this information. But I think what is obvious is all of the fracturing that has occurred. And I think it's for me, writing the book was an act of, I mean, one of the things that I found out was that in this psychotic break, Kevin had actually been trying to take his own life. And this was backed up by evidence, and it was backed up by these three mental health professionals, who all said that in this moment, Kevin had been trying to take his own life when Emily intervened. And that's incredibly difficult because in a lot of ways, she was able to do physically what I feel I was not able to do for him emotionally and verbally. And so writing a book about, you know, no one could kind of understand the sense of sympathy that I had, the sense of empathy I had for someone who had been trying to take his own life and had taken someone else's instead. There are a lot of words that were thrown around, you know, selfish, crazy, et cetera. And these were the words that were thrown around, you know, even within my community, even within the Gettysburg community, people that knew Kevin. And so for me, it became an act of, you know, here's why this case is much more complicated. And beyond that, it is not isolated. It's something that we need to be talking about, mental health care, the stigmatization of those with mental illness and with depression. And we also need to talk about, you know, talking in general a little bit more.
You had Kevin's support when you started this project and started writing. As you indicated, you had been writing letters back and forth. The understanding had always been that you would not contact her family, you would not contact his family. At some point, you become, for I guess it is a proper word, right? Obsessed. You become very obsessed with this story and want to know more, and you contact his parents. He finds out about that, and from my understanding, you have not spoken to him since.
No, that's exactly right. I mean, I've reached out several times in writing this book. I've reached out several times leading up to the publication of this book, hoping to have a dialogue. I mean, when I began this book, it was sort of a defense of why people like Kevin needed our support, why we needed to look at what they've done and not see them very one-dimensionally as monsters. I wouldn't have begun this book without his support. It was going to be a defense of our friendship and our ongoing communication. And in a lot of ways, I kind of put myself as a sort of like a hero, right, in the narrative. That was my intention. And then what became very clear as I was working through, as I was finding a lot of this information out, as I was beginning to also sort of realize the effect that this friendship, that this, you know, obsession with figuring things out, with understanding this immense, immense and sensitive and personal darkness, I began to realize how unhealthy it was, how in a lot of ways my life had kind of stalled. I mean, thinking about this, writing about this, writing to Kevin was really the only productive thing I felt I was doing. And so it became very, very clear to me that I needed to find some sort of distance. I mean, ethically, too, in writing about other people and especially families, it just seems essential to me to reach out to them to make that a possibility. And neither family wanted to add to the book. I mean, obviously, I understand this is a really traumatic event. And one of the things about the book, too, is that it's relatively in close proximity to the events. It's been 6 years, and that's really no time at all. For me, that was part of the reason I felt that it was important to write it, is to be able to capture that urgency that I felt and that a lot of us, I think, felt about this case. But essentially, it was difficult because in so doing, I kind of severed that tie. I don't know what Kevin thinks of the book. I can imagine, I mean, at some point, it became less a book that I was writing with his permission and more the book that I felt that was necessary to come out of what happened. And that's to say, you know, to look at mental health, to look at Kevin's own mental health history and see within it, you know, a pattern that perhaps could have been prevented had the right steps been in place and had there been more communication as a whole.
Through the course of our conversation, you have used the word conflicted several times, that you personally have been conflicted. That would indicate to me that this story really isn't over completely for you, that there's still probably other chapters, not that you will write and publish them, but that there are other chapters of this story to unfold.
Yeah, I think that's very true. I mean, one thing for me, it's been really wonderful. There's been a lot of positive critical acclaim, you know, that this is a story of empathy, and that means a great deal to me and kind of was all that I was hoping for. But at the same time, there have been those from the Gettysburg community who feel that what I'm doing is not my story, that also feel, you know, undercut by their own struggles in dealing with this night. And that's certainly not something that I ever intended to come from this book. You know, I think if anything, what I can say is that this event really, I think, scared and traumatized a lot of us. And I mean, I've seen sort of that fallout occur. I've seen that this has brought up really difficult emotions, and obviously it's all still very close to the surface for a lot of us. So that has been something that, you know, I expected, but I don't think you can ever expect it until you have someone that you care about saying, you know, I wish you hadn't written about this. This is something I'm trying to move past, or I don't see the story quite the way that you do. And of course, that's the difficulty with a genre as subjective as memoir.
The name of the book is Visiting Hours, A Memoir of Friendship and Murder. It is published by Blue Rider Press. Amy Butcher, thank you very much for joining us this morning. Thank you for sharing. It's a great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you so much, Joe.
Thank you. Again, the title of the book, Visiting Hours, A Memoir of Friendship and Murder. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.